Hey, everybody. Thanks for being with us today. You know, it's a good day today. I hope you're jumping in at 97.1 FM. Maybe you're on 1450 AM, all of our Boundary County listeners, or maybe you're joining us at our live on our website at NorthIdahoRadio.com. However it is, it's all good. You already know it's Tuesday. This is Speak Up. My name is Barbara, and as always, we have a great program coming your way. My guest today is Brandon Durst. He is the superintendent at West Bonner County School District, and I'm sure you know there's a lot going on in the district with lots of involvement from taxpayers and parents in particular, and of course staff and the school board members, all seeking to do good and make good and effective decisions for the students and their future. So we're going to dig into the issues today with the superintendent one-on-one to help us all understand what the changes may be and what the best solutions are that they are seeking. All right, all that coming up. First, we're going to do a little business. We'll be right back.
Come on, relax with us on a summer night. The Indians baseball makes your futures right. We're here to have fun, and that's what we're going to do.
Tonight, baseball's back at Avista Stadium. Your Spokane Indians open a six-game homestand against the Los Angeles Angels affiliate, the Tri-City Dust Devils.
Back to the left field wall, going. It is gone for a home run.
Tonight, your Spokane Indians host Hispanic Heritage Night, presented by Azteca Mexican Restaurants and Corona Hard Seltzer. It's a stadium-wide fiesta as we celebrate Hispanic heritage of the Inland Northwest. There's baseball through Sunday at Avista Stadium. This Wednesday is the final Yolks Family Feast of the season. Thursday is our back-to-school and kids' lunchbox giveaway, courtesy of Nom Nom. Watch Crim 2 for details. Friday, it's fireworks night, courtesy of Bulldog Rooter. For tickets and game times, go to SpokaneIndians.com. That's SpokaneIndians.com. Tonight, it's Hispanic Heritage Night. Free parking for tickets and game time, SpokaneIndians.com.
Discover credit cards automatically double all the cash back you earn at the end of your first year, which means...
Wait, hold up. Question for the audio engineer.
Go ahead.
Did I read that right? Discover automatically doubles all your cash back?
Yeah, that's what the script says.
So if I get a Discover card right now, I can earn twice the cash back.
Apparently. Wait! Unlimited first-year cash back match, only from Discover. See terms and learn more at discover.com/match.
We expect our information in real time. U.S. Med carries continuous glucose monitors, which provide real-time readings of blood glucose levels. U.S. Med is an approved provider for Medicare and over 500 private insurers. So call 800-730-8405 today for a free insurance and Medicare benefits check. As easy as... That's 800-730-8405.
Jim Gaffigan here with some more straight talk. Let's take a moment to appreciate our sweet children, loving grandparents, and eternal soulmates. Now let's use them to save money on wireless. Because with the Straight Talk Silver plan, you get 4 lines for just $25 a month with unlimited data and no contracts. So add those human pawns, loved ones, and save money. Thanks, kids. You're finally worth it. Straight Talk Wireless, available at Walmart.
Get 4 lines on Silver Unlimited for $25 per line per month, plus taxes and fees. For data management practices and additional terms, visit straighttalk.com.
Looking for a great job? Super One Foods in Sandpoint is hiring with a variety of positions available, with some of them starting at $20 an hour. Apply today at superonefoods.net or simply stop by the store and ask for Steve or Ryan. And at Super One Foods, they say save time, shop online. Just log on and select your items, then pick up at the store in one of the reserved parking spaces or have them delivered to you. Go to superonefoods.net for Super One Foods in Sandpoint.
See our schedule, check our helpful links, or stream us anywhere, all at NorthIdahoRadio.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome back in. Join me now. Say hello to Superintendent Brandon Durst with the West Bonner County School District. Superintendent, it's really good to have you here with us today. Thanks.
Thanks, Barb. Excited to be here.
All right. Well, I know our audience is interested in a lot of things. Let's start with your qualifications for superintendent and your certification in that regard.
Yeah. So as background, I have my Ed Specialist degree in educational leadership. That program that I went through at Boise State was a superintendent's training program. So we did the superintendent internship. We did all the, you know, training components to evaluation for principals, all that sort of stuff. I completed all that program back in May of 2022. I've previously served in the legislature in both the House and the Senate as a member of the Education Committee, and have drafted quite a bit of law for Idaho for education. I was a community college instructor. I helped develop curriculum for the College of Western Idaho, and, you know, a lot of different things. So we're bringing a lot of new experience. I've also ran businesses in market research and in mediation. So I'm kind of bringing some really unique backgrounds into this role that I think have been really helpful for me in being able to see things differently and solve some problems that the district is experiencing.
You have a really broad background. I didn't realize all of that exactly. So that's a very broad background that you're bringing from education from a couple of different angles. Well, what about your certification that's pending with the Education Department? Where's that at?
So we are going to be applying for that. It looks like at the end of the month. We are waiting for the current one to expire, and then we'll apply for my provisional at that point.
Okay, so that's in play.
It is.
All right.
Yep.
Is there anything in your mind that thinks, well, that's not going to happen? That, I mean, it's just pretty pro forma, isn't it?
Well, it should be, and we're not sure. There's differing opinions about whether or not the board will be able to approve or reject. And I go at this looking at it a couple different ways. The first is we have charter administrators, and charter schools are public school districts and public schools in the state of Idaho. And charter administrators don't have any of the same qualifications that a superintendent does. But they're still managing public budgets. They're still managing public students. Students are going to public education. And so I think if we have a consistent approach from a policy standpoint, then really this should be a slam dunk and shouldn't be any problems. But you never know what might happen. And, you know, we're prepared for that just in case.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it's in hand.
Yeah.
I was telling you before we went on the air, a parent talked to me like, and apparently there are others, they're very concerned about the 4-day school week. And they have reasons for that. Talk to our audience about what is the reason that a district would go with the 4-day? What are the bullet points, the positives?
So, you know, there's pros and cons. And the pros to a 4-day school week are a few things. Number one is it can reduce staff costs, especially when you – so in school districts, we kind of divide people between certified staff and classified staff. Certified staff are the folks that are like teachers, principals, that sort of thing. People that have to go through a 4-year program and, you know, be trained up for that role. And then we have a classified staff, which are, you know, everything from our business manager down to our custodians and everything in between. And so on a 4-day school week, you can reduce costs by not having to transport as much, right? You're only running buses 4 days a week. That's a huge saving in a district as large geographically.
Especially with gas prices the way they are.
Yeah, for sure. So that's a big piece. And then, you know, you don't have to clean your buildings as often because you don't have children there. You don't have, you know, you have more time to do maintenance because you've got a fifth day where dedicated maintenance can occur that might help save money in the long run because you can do some preventative maintenance during the school year instead of waiting until the end of the year to get it done. So those are a couple examples. You know, there's heating and electrical costs that can save, although in a district like West Bonner, it's not as advantageous because we're running a boiler and you can't just turn off a boiler the way that you can electrical heat. But, you know, those are a few of the advantages. Another one that's oftentimes touted is the ability to attract staff. Especially certified staff teachers, because telling them, hey, you're going to only have a 4-day work week, that can be attractive, right? To always know you're going to have a 3-day weekend every week. So those things are potential benefits that a district could see. In my research, the success of those programs really comes down to the willingness of a community and a district to really buy into it.
You know, I have some experience with this at the university level, and staff, especially staff with kids, they kind of resist at the beginning. But I'm telling you, once you get into it, at least with my experience, once you get used to that extra day for doctor's appointments, dentist, you get it covered as a family. You get to do things together. It works. It can be a challenge. It's definitely a transition, and change can be hard, but it can be successful is what I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you've got to have – I mean, things are as bad as you want them to be, and they're as good as you want them to be.
Yeah.
Right? It's about – oftentimes it's about your mentality. If you're going to look at this as an opportunity – to spend more time with your family or to do those sorts of things, that's awesome.
Or even an experiment. What happens if it turns out that the board and you and the parents, you know, say, you know what, this is just not working in our district. Can next year, probably not 23-24 school year, but can this be reversed or what?
It can. I mean, they could be changed at any time, frankly. Yeah. The board could make a vote and change this. There would be some procedural pieces to that, of course, related to the contracts that we have with our staff. But this doesn't have to be – like this isn't the final word.
Right.
I think it's a way of saying it, right? So
yeah.
We could move a different direction if it looks that way. But I will say, you know, when I listen to community members who have concerns about the four-day work – about the four-day school week, it's typically coming from parents who work full-time and don't have childcare available on that fifth day. And one of the things that I want to make sure people – are aware of is that there is a process right now underway. In fact, I had a meeting in my office yesterday with PRYC, which is a new 501c3 organization in Priest River that's going to be offering a fifth day child care program.
Awesome.
And we're hoping that's basically free or relatively inexpensive for families so that they can take advantage of that. It's on the agenda for the board meeting tomorrow to be approved for us to be able to offer that location by the district to the nonprofit so they can use the space so that we have a safe place for those kids to be able to be on Fridays and to help reduce some stress for parents as well.
So the fifth day is going to be Friday. It's Monday through Thursday is the school week, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday is
yes, ma'am.
The weekend.
Correct.
All right. That's good to know. I just like the idea that, you know, for 1 year, not like call it an experiment, but usually the four-day week really, really, like you say, it attracts staff.
Yeah.
They want to go skiing and they don't want to ski on the weekend. I know that might sound frivolous, but hey, this is life and lifestyle we're talking about.
Yep.
Yeah, doctor's appointments and all kinds of good stuff.
Yeah, when we hear a lot about work-life balance.
Yes.
Nowadays. And I think this does create an opportunity to kind of have more of that balance. That
That's
otherwise...
a good thought. I hadn't thought about it. There is a balance in there. All right. Let's move on to another difficult area. And that is the junior high school and the aging boiler. There are so many elements here about closing the school and can the kids be there while the work's going on. Break it down for our audience. First of all, what's wrong with the boiler and how do we get that fixed?
So, you know, if the building's only problem was the heating, you know, that would be that'd be a very simple fix. I mean, it costs us some money, but it wouldn't be very difficult, really. The problem is that the building has a lot of things wrong with it, and they're all, you know, not cheap to replace. So the boiler itself, you know, it doesn't regulate heat well. It's basically either all on or all off. My understanding is that there's a kind of a lower place that we could do it, but it's kind of there's kind of this kind of middle ground. You can put it in kind of preservation mode, but you really can't change the temperature. So it's either really, really hot or it's really, really cold. And you know, we could fix the boiler. There is a plan in place. It could cost about $70,000 for us to do something with it that would probably give it some more life for another 10 or so years, right? That's something we could do. But the question is, do we want to invest $70,000 into a antiquated form of heating, you know, that uses heating oil that's increasingly more expensive? That's the one piece. You know, the pipes, from my understanding, is the pipes in the building are 75%, you know, compacted. So that's creating problems. There's just the windows need to be replaced. There's a lot of stuff There's, you know, asbestos abatement. There's lead paint, most likely. I don't know that for sure, but I'm guessing given the age of the building, that's probably the case. You know, so there's a lot of stuff that's just needing a repair in that building. And to the extent that the community wants to invest in that building, then I think that we should be able to. But I also look at this from a, you know, from a fiscal standpoint and say, what's the best investment that we can make for our kids? And if, maybe it is this building, maybe it's something else, but I think we need to at least be really serious about going through the process and having hard conversations with our community to explain, you know, these are the trade-offs that we have to have. And yeah.
I was just going to say, of every article I've read or report of a meeting, the only thing that gets reported is the boiler.
Yeah.
I think if they understand, we understand pipes, windows, asbestos, lead. I mean, this is huge. This is huge. This is long-term costs coming.
Yeah.
You know, I understand the emotional thing. I'll bet you do too.
Sure,
it's
of course.
Emotional.
Yeah,
people
absolutely.
Attended this school.
I went to Boise High School. It's the oldest high school in the state of Idaho, right? I saw a very old building.
Yeah.
Be demolished as I was going to school next, you know, as one of our buildings. And it was hard to watch. I get it.
Like, yeah, exactly.
But it wasn't the right building for the space anymore. And there was the cost analysis was if we can remove this building, then we can build something that's much, much nicer.
For probably maybe less money.
Absolutely.
Really.
Yeah.
And certainly build a better building.
Yeah. Yep.
Rather than retrofitting old. Well, that's, I mean, I understand how hard. I grew up in a small town in Illinois. And we had a high school there back in the days when you could have your own little high school in your little community before they did the word consolidation.
Yeah, we don't talk about that anymore.
Exactly. But they did in Illinois, and it happened, and I was out of the – but anyway, yeah, I get the emotional part. What about the – what would you do – so let's say that the decision is, you know, we're not going to retrofit this. We need to – it's going to be what, a tear down or build someplace else or something. What's the portable solution? I know people think portables are cheesy, but really they're very nice. I have some experience in that area too. They're really nice portables.
Yeah. I don't think – I would just start off by saying I don't think anyone is advocating to tear down the building.
Okay.
Right? This is a historical building. We don't want to get rid of it.
Good point.
Regardless of what we do, if we decide we want to retrofit this building and make it – a sustainable building going forward, there will be a period of time where we have to close it down. Like, we just won't be able to do all that work and have students in it at the same time. That's just a reality.
Right.
And so, you know, there are a myriad of opportunities or options we could look at, right? We could have, you know, seventh graders stay at the elementary school. We could have seventh and eighth grade go up to the high school, and that would include portables, you know, and I hear people talk bad about them, but I remember in my elementary days, I spent a lot of time in portables because that's what we did because I was in a growing district, and that's how you built more capacity very quickly. So,
yeah.
And the buildings then aren't nearly as nice as the ones that they have now either. So,
yeah.
You know, it's, I think that the struggle I think oftentimes people have, and I appreciate that this is the struggle, is it's something different. It's
yeah.
Change. It's not what they're used to.
Right.
Right. And, you know, for some people, that's a really high hurdle to jump over, right? And for others, it's not that big of a deal. It says, okay, well, it's changed, but it is what it is. We have to do this.
Right.
And so it's my responsibility and it's the board's responsibility to make sure that we bring people alongside us and make sure that they know, you know, what the plans are and they have input and their input matters.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it just as a point of, you know, self-reflection, I know that sometimes I don't do the greatest job with that. And so that's places that I have room for growth. Because I love change and it doesn't bother me. And
yeah.
I look at the problem. I say, here's a solution and we should move on it. And I get that most people don't have that same level of comfort.
Yeah. They need more reassurance. You know, one of the things that I think might help, at least it helps me when change is happening in my life or professional, that is a picture truly is worth a thousand words.
Yeah.
If they could really see a video of what these portables look like now
yeah.
and how nice they are and the heating and the air conditioning and the windows. I mean, they're not little boxcars anymore.
No,
they are really nice. And so as a transition element, it's just not that bad. But they have to see it and then be willing. And you said early on in our topic on this, it's the other half of this is the willingness to really, you know, try to do something different or just to be open to change. It's hard.
Yep, it is. And you know, it reminds me a lot of what you're talking about is my wife and I have remodeled houses, right? We've bought homes that I can look at it and I can say, this is what it's going to look like when I'm done.
Yeah.
And I can just visualize it. And I remember we bought a house that had a completely destroyed, unfinished basement. I brought my dad and I said, we're going to do this. We're going to make this a livable space. And he's like, I don't see it. I don't see how you're going to do this.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until it was done. He's like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay, now I see it. But I get it's hard for me because I can just visualize it. Not everybody can do that. And so I think you're absolutely right. It's incumbent upon me and others to provide them
pictures,
that visual,
videos,
so they can get where we are too.
And then they can see.
Yep,
they
exactly.
See what it looks like. They don't just hear about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was exactly that way when we were building a house. I was like magazine pictures, cutting things out, driving Gary crazy because he could already see it when it was just like dirt.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what's my driveway going to be like?
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, that sounds like, I don't want you to call the horse race, but when does this decision have to be made in your opinion?
I think we need to have a decision on this by the end of September.
Okay.
And the reason is because we needed to decide, do we want to go out for a bond, for example? If the decision is we're going to keep the building, we're going to just put the money in, get it all done, we need to make a decision.
We need a bond or a levy, and that'd be November. Yeah.
Correct. And so
I think it helps the parents to know the time frame.
Yeah.
Get that information to them. All right. We're up against a break. We're going to take that break right now. We will be right back.
The Habitat for Humanity's very own ReStore in Sandpoint has been a long-time go-to source for new and used building supplies, furniture, appliances, electrical, plumbing, windows, doors, and so much more. Everything you need for all your home building and remodeling projects. Prices are 50% lower or more than most retail outlets. Stop by the ReStore in Sandpoint on Baldy Park Drive next to Miller's Country Store. Visit them at iphfh.org.
We all know there are morning people and not so morning people. But now that McDonald's has bagels, the morning people demographic might just have to make room for some new members of the club. Talk about a game changer.
There's no better way to wake up. Try McDonald's hearty steak, egg, and cheese bagel with a juicy steak patty and grilled onions, fluffy eggs, and melty cheese. Or try one with smoky bacon or savory sausage at participating McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
The share it with a friend deal. Even if that friend is yourself. Your McDonald's, your rules.
And if your McDonald's is all about getting your favorites, have we got a deal for you. Buy one tender McChicken, juicy McDouble, or mouth-watering hot and spicy McChicken, get a second for a dollar. Or mix and match. Perfect for sharing with, well, yourself. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Let's face it, scrap happens. When it does, recycle it with Pacific Steel and Recycling in Ponderé. Steve here to let you know whether you have scrap metals to recycle or need new steel for a project, we are here to serve you. And because we appreciate your business, we are here to serve you free coffee and donuts every Friday morning. So if you have scrap, need new steel, or just want coffee and a donut, come see us at Pacific Steel and Recycling, located at 1000 Triangle Drive in Ponderé.
Some days I cover up because of my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. Now I'm hitting the road with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi, Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150 milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. With Skyrizi, 3 out of 4 people achieved 90% clearer skin at 4 months. And Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions and an increased risk of infections or a lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check for infection and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms such as fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, or if you plan to or recently received a vaccine.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin, and that means everything. doctor today about SKYRIZI, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis. And visit SKYRIZI.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
North Idaho's Radio, 97.1 FM.
Hey everybody, welcome back in. As usual, we've got it going on for you today. We are talking with Brandon Durst. He is the superintendent at West Bonner County School District, and we've just got a lot of good information going out. I hope you're enjoying it. I hope you're going to share this with your friends and your family. If you're missing some of this, there's always a recording that gets posted about 24 hours from right now at our radio website at NorthIdahoRadio.com. You can listen to all of this again, and you can share it. So we just appreciate you guys tuning in. And, Brandon, I appreciate your being here, answering all my questions and everything. Well, let's turn our attention to the financial status of the district. I understand some new money, not new money, but some money that we thought we didn't have, we do have.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So the district received – I called the county's office, auditor's office, and found out that there would be a check delivered, which was for roughly $160,000. And it was for levy collections for the previous levies. And so right now, just to kind of help your listeners better understand what that money is, what we are trying to do at the district office is to ascertain – whether or not that money was previously budgeted or not. And unfortunately, the way that the budget had been previously created has caused some difficulty with being able to answer that question. So what we don't know, so let me just kind of back up real quick. There's two ways you could do the budget, right? You could either do the budget based off of money you've already received and budget for that, or you can use budgeting through anticipated revenue. Mm-hmm. And what we can't quite tell yet is whether or not the previous budgets utilized the anticipated revenue process. If they have, then this money was money that has already been budgeted and has already been technically spent. We don't know that though.
Okay.
And that is a very, very complicated and complex process to get to that answer, because there's commingle of funds. It's not like we have a account for each one of these levies that we put money into each month, right? We have one giant account that all the money goes into all at once. And so because there's mingling of those funds, it makes it very difficult to decide, well, was this dollar a levy dollar? And if it was a levy dollar, then where did it go? And when you paid for something, well, what was the source of the funding for that? We do that better with our federal funds because we have to, but other types of funds are much more difficult. And that creates, again, a lot of complexity and a lot of problems for us on the back end.
You know, kind of an obvious question that isn't going to help with this $160,000 and probably other money you're trying to ferret out. But going forward, will there be an effort to keep these funds separate? Can that be done?
It could be done. We could do it that way. But what we'll do, what we are diligently trying to get done, is to make sure that we know exactly where we have money and where they came from, and having a budget process in place so that every time a dollar is spent, that dollar has a name and it has a source, and really utilizing a more sophisticated budgeting process where we've broken all of our budgets into business units, which is a very, you know, traditional way that you would do it in the corporate world. Mm-hmm. Where you would say, here's the business unit, and the business unit has this much spending authority for its budget, and it's broken into these line items, right?
Yeah.
So we've not done it that way. Mm-hmm. The district has not traditionally done things in that level of detail. And so we are changing the budgetary processes. It's going to make it very difficult for us at the outset. But once we get done getting everything set up, it'll make things much easier going forward. And when future budgets are approved, we'll already have the templates in place for all those business units. And we want the other thing that we're doing that's unique, or not unique, but different than how it has been done, is we're giving the authority to those business units to make their own budgetary decisions and then bring them to the district office, rather than the district office being the heavy that says, this is how you'll do it.
Right.
Because exactly. We want them to own it, because They know what they need. They know what their area is. So we're talking about facilities and maintenance, for example. Like, they know what their costs are going to be. They can, they're the experts. They should tell us what they're going to need, and with it, to the extent that we have revenue to support those things,
right.
We will.
Within the boundaries and the legal restrictions, I think that's really good. And you know what? Going forward with these reports, the thing, if I were on the board or a parent or a teacher, I wouldn't want to even look at a financial report that I did not just understand in my own innocence.
Yeah.
I don't have to be a bookkeeper or an accountant. I should not have to be
understand
where we are financially. Every time there's a board meeting, that question can be answered with clear things.
And that's the key, is so much about this is about transparency for the public,
yes.
Right? This is the public's business.
Right.
And the public should understand what's going on.
In numbers that you can read and understand. We have an issue at our HOA where our accountant gives us reports that somebody on our board's got to like rewrite because they write it in this mysterious way. I said, well, just tell them not to write it in that mysterious. It's incumbent on the fiscal team that you've got to make it understandable.
And that's what we're working on.
Awesome. I like that. What about the in-depth audit? They've already got kind of a preliminary audit that's happened. I love auditors.
Yeah. So we have, as most people are aware, the board approved a forensic audit.
It just means in depth.
Right.
Yeah.
So the big difference between a forensic audit and a financial audit, you compare spending with revenue, right? And if, as long as those two things match up, you're fine. A forensic audit takes it another step. It says, you said you're going to spend money on this. Did you actually spend the money on that thing, or was it on something else?
Yeah.
And that creates more level of accountability. So where we are with that is we've been providing documentation to the auditor, which is Ide Bailey. And I thought that we had everything put together for them. We are still working on a couple more things. One of the struggles we've had is one of the accounts that we have to use for the audit was closed. And so we had to go through a process to re-add people to a closed account and then be able to get access to those accounts, which is a bit of a laborious process. Banks don't like to reopen accounts that are closed. Mm-mm. For the purpose of just getting documentation. So we've gone through that and we're getting that done. And, you know, we expect to get a preliminary report on the 25th of August, which will kind of give us a little bit of a roadmap about where we are. And at that point, I'm hopeful that the auditor will tell us whether or not we need to complete the other two phases of the audit. I suspect it probably will, but to make sure that we don't poison the well, we've really just given them the documentation and said, don't tell us what you're finding. Just
do it.
Just do what you're doing because it's your job. We want to stay out of it.
Right. Exactly. You know, I'm going to say again, the reason that I am so pleased to be talking to you today is because the level of detail, like just the complication of going back and finding out this information, you know, accounts that are closed and to get the bank to release information. I don't think most people understand why and how that's happening and how that makes it difficult to do. And if they could understand that, they'd be more patient, I think, and more, I don't know what the word is, supportive.
Yeah. Well, like yesterday, I spent an hour at Wells Fargo here in Sandpoint because we had an account that was closed. It has three signers on it who are no longer with the district for a closed account. So we had a process we had to go through. Board had to make a move, had to approve a motion. They put something in the minutes that we could have that done. It's not just a matter of calling your local credit union and saying, hey, I need my bank statements.
Right.
If it was that easy, we would have been done a long time ago.
Exactly.
But there's many steps that we have to follow, and legally those are required, and the financial institutions are required to make us follow them, and we should. I'm glad those are there for consumers' protection.
Exactly.
But
it's just like the auditors.
Yeah.
They're there for a reason. I said before, I love auditors. We had auditors on the campus every day of the year because we had like 13 streams of financial money coming in, and somebody was auditing. They were our friends.
Yeah.
They kept us righteous.
Yes. Yep, exactly.
All right, let's go to something that I'm excited about, and that's your staffing. You've got some new staff, you know, which is not to take away from the current staff, the people that have been there serving and loving these students and helping in the district, but it's also fun to have some new people come on board the team to work together.
Yeah, we've had You know, we've had a lot of successes with who we've brought on at both the classified and certified levels. I'm really excited about the classified staff we have in the district office. Here's an example. It was 6 o'clock last Friday, and the office was still on Friday evening, and our staff was still all there working. We've got a lot of committed people who really want to do a good job, and I know that's true of our certified staff. We've had some really, really great hires for our students, and some of those teachers are going to bring some new ideas. And you know, it's like you said, you know, we really appreciate those who have been with us, but it's also great when you get new people in who have new ideas and they can share things and just kind of rekindle. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you just need that new spark to be able to get things moving. And I'm excited that we'll have people in there that'll hopefully raise the expectation and the bar so that we can, you know, get our kids to where they need to be.
You know, it seems to me, and this has been proven in a lot of different school districts, you use the phrase raise the bar. Kids, the students, if you raise the bar, they meet that. They
exactly
like
right.
to be challenged. And staff is the same way. We all like it. It's like playing tennis with somebody better. No, not better, but just to keep you fired up.
Yeah, I think that's the human condition, right?
Yes.
We want to prove that we can do more. We can do better.
And we can do more and do better.
We sure can. And so I think we don't want to rest on our laurels and just say this is all we can do. If we continue to challenge ourselves, I think we're going to not just improve the outcomes for our students, but we're going to show to others what they can do too. And I think that's important.
For all the students coming along that aren't in the school yet.
Yep.
All right. I can't believe it. We're up against our last and final break. We're going to do it right now, but we have more with Superintendent Brandon Durst right after this.
Hi, this is Rich from White Cross Pharmacy and Compounding. This year we celebrate 20 years in Sandpoint. We have been blessed to serve this wonderful community. Your support and the staff's hard work have made this possible. Come meet the staff and experience the service and services that have made us a success. We offer compounding, drive-through, convenience packaging, and a wide selection of over-the-counter products. We value your time and support. Serving Sandpoint since 2003 and North Idaho since 1922, White Cross Pharmacy.
Have you heard the long-term weather forecasts? It appears there won't be any let-up for the dry summers we've experienced. So if you're new to the area, or have lived here a while, and you own timberland, you're going to hear the word wildfire a lot. Idaho Forest Group can help protect your valuable forests with a little planning. Our experienced foresters can assess any vulnerabilities you might have and come up with a strategy to help reduce the risk of forest fire devastation to your property. Idaho Forest Group has been part of the region for a long time, and our track record for timberland protection is unmatched. Wildfires will happen in our area. We can help protect your timber investment against that, as well as damage from insects, disease, or high winds. And if selective thinning is recommended, you may choose to sell any merchantable trees. If you own 10 or more acres of timberland, call Idaho Forest Group, and we'll schedule a free site visit by our forester. Visit ifg.com.
Hello, this is Scott
and Ty of Albertson Barlow Insurance Services.
We are very proud to provide the Sandpoint area with quality, competitive companies and exceptional service.
For all your insurance needs, whether it's life, health, home, auto, or commercial coverage, Scott and I are available to assist you in determining what coverage meets you and your family's needs.
We are located in the old Powerhouse Building, Suite 203, so come on down and see us. 208-265-6406.
Northern Idaho Power Sports carries a full line of award-winning Bobcat tractors and implements. Bobcat is the name you've known and trusted for over 75 years. Right now, you can buy any compact tractor and get a free front-end loader. Purchase any Bobcat mower or tractor and get a free CF Moto 2,000-watt generator while supplies last. Don't pay extra for green paint. Come see for yourself at Northern Idaho Power Sports, 2 miles north of downtown Sandpoint on Highway 95.
Two Tones at the Ranch Club is open. Try the signature dishes, drunken marsala, spaghetti with mozzarella stuffed meatballs, or chipotle barbecue salmon. Full menu at twotonescafe.com. A location in Bonner's Ferry, 6536 Main Street, with entertainment in our secret garden patio. And the new location, Two Tones at the Ranch, Highway 2 Priest River on the golf course. Stop in for lunch or dinner 7 days a week. serving brunch on Sundays 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in Priest River. TwoTonesCafe.com.
97.1 FM, 1450 KBFI, and 1400 KSPT.
Hey, everybody, welcome back in. As you know, we've got it going on today with West Bonner County School District Superintendent Brandon Durst. He's here answering all the questions. I hope you're enjoying it. And I encourage you to, if you've missed a part of it, you can listen to the recording that will be at NorthIdahoRadio.com. Well, Superintendent, you know, one of the things that is the most difficult with emotions involved and change, wanting to make changes, is when we talk about academic achievement and the graduation rate. People get defensive for mm-hmm. their kids and the yeah. teachers and everybody. But yet, it's a reality. And you said when we were off the air, every meeting needs to deal with academic achievement because that's what you're all about.
Yeah. I mean, that's why we're here.
That's
right?
Why you're here.
We're here to educate kids. And if we're not measuring how that is going, and if we're not talking about how that's going, if we're not being intentional in our conversations about that, then we aren't giving it the due respect it should have.
The priority.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So it's a big deal. And I get that, you know, some folks do get defensive because you're kind of saying, well, maybe my child's not performing, or maybe as a teacher, I'm not doing as well as is expected of me. And I don't think it should be used as a stick, right?
Right.
But what we have to also say is, look, patrons have the right and should expect certain levels of performance out of the school district. You know, we're spending, 60%+ of the state budget is going into education. There should be an expectation that we have something to show for that. And frankly, our state constitution, you know, makes it clear that we have this education system because we need to be able to protect our republic. And if we're not educating our kids, then how are we going to be able to do that? So, you know, for me, it's really important that we identify where we are and that we set each other up for success. And that's what I talk about with my new staff, with my old staff. I want to put people in a position to be successful. Whether that's our students or our staff, they have to have the tools at their disposal to make that happen. And then we have to just trust that they will do what they need to do to make that to get to that point.
Yeah. You know, when you do, there's an old term called management by objectives. A lot of people know it. It's been around for a long time. And the purpose of it is you've got to have markers, measurable, quantifiable markers. Otherwise, you don't know where you are or how you're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what academic achievement and graduation rates are all about. They're just markers on how are we doing, and that's what we all need to know.
Yeah, I think exactly right. And I think, you know, one of the things you hear, a lot of the pushback you hear in education is, you know, we don't control the inputs. And that's true, right? We don't get to choose who our students are. The students are who show up.
Right.
And there's a lot of externalities that are impacting those students' ability to be successful. But what we can do is, as much as it's dependent upon us, we can set those kids up for success.
Yeah.
So that means identifying programmatic and other processes that put kids in a place where they're able to learn. You know, that's class sizes. That's, you know, being able to assess growth, you know, having good assessment process, having good curriculum, making sure the teachers are properly trained, that they're being, you know, mentored the way they need to be. All those sorts of things kind of come together in a culmination that allow us to improve those sorts of outcomes. And that's really where, for me, I came into this position with two goals. The first was to improve, you know, the first was to improve student outcomes, and the second was to fix the budget. And so we really are focused, you know, 100% on those two things as much as we can be.
All right, Joe, I want to go back this whole thing about statistics. There was a letter to the editor recently, and this person that wrote it said that the, you know, talking about academic statistics and graduation rates was bullying students. Nothing could be further from the truth. Where does that idea come from?
You know, I think that's, you know, people are defensive, and I understand that, but what we don't do our students any service by telling them that failure is an option, that, you know, poor performance is an option. Because when they get out into the real world, that's not going to be their reality.
Right.
You know, you show up to work 50% of the time, you're not going to be working for it. You're not going to be working very long. If you only successfully do your job 50% of the time, you're not going to have a job very long. The expectation in the real world is you're going to be proficient most of the time.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the points of school is not just to learn subjects. It's to learn life processes and how things work and to be able to build within yourself the capacity for success.
Right.
And to have work ethic and standards. And so I understand folks who are a little resistant to that, but at the same time, it's not helpful to tell a student that we don't have high expectations for them. And if we do give them high expectations, they'll meet them.
Exactly. You know, that is so true. I don't know. I mean, it is just absolutely true. For you said it before, it's a human condition. The higher the expectation, the more we try and achieve because it's expected.
Yep.
And that doesn't mean perfect. It just means progress. That's
exactly
all that means, not perfection. Yes. All right. We're winding down here. Let me see what we've got. Well, I've got one more thing that was in that letter I'd like you to comment on. This person said, quote, residents coming to live here from different parts of the country, he was saying, you know, they need to just, back off, intimating that new residents or people that haven't lived here forever have lost their right to freedom of speech. We want to hear from everyone.
Yeah, and I think as a superintendent, I say this in my town hall meetings I've been having and other places, you know, I'm answerable to my board members, and my board members are answerable to every member of the community, whether they have children in the school district, whether they lived here for 5 minutes or 50 years. It doesn't matter. They all have the right to have their voices heard and to have their
pro
input.
Pro and con.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's important. So.
All right. Well, one of the other things that I'd like you to comment on is a few of the things that you're the most excited about. Looking forward, looking down the road, what are you really excited about?
I'm really, really excited about our new curriculum director position and the implementation of the Edulastic assessment program. I think it's going to do a lot of great things for our students and their student outcomes. It's one of the main initiatives I wanted to make sure that we got done this school year. This district has operated without a curriculum director for a very long time, maybe forever. And that's been a problem. And, you know, I'm excited that we finally got that position posted and filled, and we've got a phenomenal employee for that. And so.
So what is the curriculum Hillsdale or is it something else?
Well, that's different. That's the that's the adoption of the curriculum,
oh,
which we'll be going through that, but the curriculum director will be help leading that process.
Okay.
And that'll actually create some structure and some systems behind what we're doing. And it'll say, hey, we're going to do some assessment here. You know, that'll help us out. And hopefully it'll hopefully improve instruction for our early service teachers too, because those are the sorts of things that have direct impact on student learning and goes back to what I said. Student outcomes have to get better, but we're putting people in the position where they can succeed. And I'm really excited about where we're heading in that way.
That is super. One quick thing is when the old curriculum got sent back, I was actually told by a person it cost $21,000 to send that curriculum back. I saw the invoice. It was $1,100 or $1,200, something.
Yeah, $1,200
like that.
Is what it sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Not $21,000.
I have found
postage.
Since, yeah, I have found since being here that I don't want to jump to the conclusions that a lot of folks do, and I get there's a lot of uncertainty and there's a lot of fear that drive a lot of what happens.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that, but at the same time, it's my responsibility as an educational leader to be above that and focus on the things that we can control.
I love that. We're going to let that be the last word. Thank you again, Superintendent Brandon Durst.
Thanks, Barb. Appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for jumping in with us. You know I love it when you're out there listening, and welcome your feedback. Come on back next week. We're going to stay with West Bonner County School District. We'll be talking with Susan Brown. She's one of the board members whose name is on the recall, and she's got things to say, and we want to be listening. So until next week, this is Barbara saying take care of yourself and each other, and may God richly bless you, my friends.